speak with you in the name of our loving, liberating, and life-giving God. Amen. If we believe in freedom, we cannot rest until all are free. The Reverend Dr. Anna Pauline Murray went on to say, "I want to see America be what she says she is in the Declaration of Independence. America, be what you proclaim yourself to be." The last couple of weeks, I've had to make an effort to find my way back to hope. I have felt, as many women of every age have felt since Roe v. Wade fell, in despair. I came to age in a Roe world. My right to choose, my health care rights, were fought for before I came of age. They were mine. I want those same rights for all who need them always. I want them for my daughter and her children. The Reverend Dr. Anna Pauline Murray's relentless struggle and determined work for all human rights resulted in legal briefs and numerous writings, which continue today to be used by many a legal team fighting for civil rights. July 1 is her feast day in the Episcopal Church. I spent the last few weeks rereading her memoir, Song in a Weary Throat, watching the documentary on her life, narrated by herself and those who knew her and some who have used her legal work. I read Debbie Nelson Link's wonderful book, Pauli Murray, Shouting for the Rights of All People, at least 3 times this week alone, and Pauli Murray's book, Dark Testament and Other Poems. And I gotta tell you, my hope started to return. If you do not know of the Reverend Dr. Pauli Murray, get to know her. She was relentlessly determined to gain freedom and equality for the Negro, with a capital N, for women and for all human rights. As a representative of the LGBTQ community commented in the documentary of her life, "We live in an architecture of the world that Pauli Murray built." Scholars say that you cannot teach American history without teaching about Pauli Murray. Did you learn about Pauli Murray in school? Neither did I. In the midst of her relentless pursuit of knowledge, she continued her work in nonviolent actions for human rights. Pauli was a writer, poet, lawyer, a priest. She struggled with her gender identity in a day where there was not much help for that struggle. She spent some time each year in hospital trying desperately to understand why she was born with the attributes of a female and yet felt that she identified more closely as male. Debbie Nelson Link does a deeply caring and thoughtful job of describing this in her book right at the beginning. She writes, "I have given a lot of thought to pronoun usage in this book. It's important to note that Pauli Murray used singular she, her pronouns during her life. The use of more inclusive language has its own history, and it continues to evolve. Today, many choose to use gender-neutral pronouns, such as they and their. Had Pauli lived at a different time, she might have selected pronouns that more accurately reflected her gender identity. For this reason, Debbie chose to use a combination of pronouns to both respect Pauli's voice and honor her identity. And I am going to do the same." I highly recommend the documentary on Amazon Prime, My Name is Pauli Murray. The description reads, "Overlooked by history, Pauli Murray was a legal trailblazer whose ideas influenced RGB's fight for gender equality and Thurgood Marshall's civil rights arguments. This is a portrait of their impact as a non-binary black luminary lawyer, activist, poet, and priest who transformed the world. Now, as I read this and listened to Pauli, I believe she used the word Negro with a capital N throughout their career, even when teaching at Brandeis to young African Americans in the Black Panther days who much preferred black. Pauli's parents died when she was young, and she was eventually raised by her Aunt Pauline, a teacher. Aunt Pauline called Pauli her girl boy and raised them to be themselves. It was when Pauli left the Negro neighborhood they grew up in that they encountered intense feelings that we would call gender nonconforming today. Pauli went to law school to fight segregation and for civil rights. She ended up at Howard University, and though she started out with another woman in the class of all black men, it wasn't long until she was the only woman in the class. She was not allowed to speak in the class. And this is when she named this treatment Jane Crow, in the long years of state and local laws of Jim Crow. She used Jane Crow to name the racial and sex discrimination that she and many others encountered. She decided to get smart, and she got the highest grades in her first year at Howard. Pauli was allowed to speak in class after that. She graduated at the top of the class, something she would do repeatedly throughout her academic career. It was after the lynching of Matt Parker in 1959 that Pauli decided to leave the United States. It was their breaking point. Pauli moved to Ghana and taught law for 18 months. And it was during this time away that Pauli became convinced that the Negro destiny lay in the United States. Pauli wrote, "I feel as American as anyone else. Our blood, sweat, tears, and memories are built into this country, and our destiny lies with the United States," end quote. Pauli returned and received a fellowship at Yale Law School, and she earned a JSD, a Doctorate of the Science of Law, the highest degree in the study of law. And once again, Pauli Murray was ahead of their time, as the first African-American student to receive this degree from Yale. In 2017, Yale University named a residential college in Pauli's honor, the Pauli Murray College. It is the first Yale college named after a person of color and the first named after a person recognized as LGBTQ. Pauli Murray was labeled a firebrand. Pauli used the typewriter in their nonviolent actions and wrote what were called hot letters to many, including President Franklin Roosevelt. When Pauli thought he waited too long to speak out against atrocities set upon the Negro or did not speak up for civil rights, they banged out a hot letter and off it went. One such letter was copied to Eleanor Roosevelt, who replied, and so began an unlikely but close friendship that lasted the rest of their life. Long before other nonviolent actions that many of us have probably heard of, Pauli organized a sit-in for days in a whites-only delicatessen on U Street in Washington, D.C. They filled every table and just sat politely and read when they were not served and told to leave. Eventually, the delicatessen gave in, and the whole of U Street was opened to all. Pauli and a travel companion refused to give up their seat on the bus in Virginia and were arrested and put in a bug-infested cell. This was like a decade before Rosa Parks. What did Pauli do? She sued them. Pauli worked with Betty Friedan for women's rights, and together with Shirley Chisholm and Muriel Fox, founded the National Organization for Women, because now was the time for women to have equal rights. When Pauli Murray's love of their life, Irene Barlow, died in 1973, Pauli was bereft. Pauli described themselves as one of the walking wounded. They lost their silent partner and their dearest love. Pauli Murray was a deeply religious person, and so began thinking about spiritual and moral problems in the world. Pauli decided to offer themselves to deeper lay ministry. The call to ordination unfolded, and Pauli went to seminary to the surprise of her family. And this is where my life and my ordination journey intersects with Pauli's. Pauli began her ordination process in the Diocese of Massachusetts and was mentored through the process by Bishop Suffragan Morris Arnold, as I was only 5 years later. The timing of Pauli's journey to ordination was at a tumultuous time in the church, when the General Convention repeatedly denied to pass the ordination of women to the Sacred Order of Priests, the last defeat being in 1973. Many of the courageous women forced the issue with an irregular ordination of 11 of them, at hands laid on by three courageous bishops in Philadelphia on July 29, 1974, my first year in college. As Pauli writes in their memoir, this ordination was historic in more than one respect. It took place in a church in the heart of Philadelphia, in the Philadelphia ghetto, and a Negro congregation was the host. And symbolically, the rejected opened their arms to the rejected. These were turbulent years in the church, and Pauli was in the midst of the turbulence once more. The ordination of women to the priesthood was approved at the next General Convention in 1976 and became effective on January 1, 1977. Pauli was ordained on January 8, 1977, the first African-American woman to be ordained in the Episcopal Church. I was in my second semester of my first year at Union Theological Seminary in New York. I was ordained 5 years later by the Bishop Diocesan of Massachusetts, Bishop John Coburn. I stand every day on the shoulders of the 11 courageous women ordained in Philadelphia. And by the way, the crucifer at that service was none other than Barbara Harris. I stand on their shoulders, and I stand on the shoulders of those who fought alongside them, including Pauli Murray. And I give them enormous gratitude every day of my ordained life. The church would never have approved the ordination of women in 1973 if it weren't for these women. I'm ever grateful to have served and learned alongside several of them in my early years of priesthood. The Reverend Dr. Pauli Murray presided at the Eucharist for the first time in the very church, Chapel of the Cross in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where her enslaved grandmother Cornelia had been baptized. The first African-American woman, the first woman to preside at an altar at the Eucharist in the Diocese of North Carolina. In 2020, building on Pauli Murray's work, the ACLU won a Supreme Court case prohibiting discrimination against lesbian, gay, and transgender persons. As one commentator noted, Pauli continues to be a beacon of solace for so many queer, transgender, and non-conforming people. Generations down the road, Pauli will still be a beacon of solace and hope. Professor Tina Liu, head of Yale University's Pauli Murray College, says this: if you study the past, you have to understand that people who become well-respected and celebrated compare poorly with the people who deserve to be well respected and celebrated. Polly is somebody whose time has not yet come, and it might not yet come fully, because we have to work for a world on which it does come. My hope has returned in earnest, my dear ones, and I beg you, get to know the length, depth, and passions of the Reverend Dr. Polly Murray's life, for your hope will return too. And I'll see you among the activists needed now, needed more than ever, right now, to find a way to keep for ours and the next generations the rights so desperately fought for before us. As Debbie Nelson Link wrote in her book, Chapter 11, Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, on July 1, 1985, Polly Murray reached the end of their long journey. They died in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, of cancer. Who knew that young Anna Polly Murray would grow up and change the world? Polly had gone from the world of Jim Crow laws to a world that was at least more free of legal separation. They learned from a young age the importance of family, faith, hard work, and study. As a young child, Polly learned to speak out and protest things they disliked. They knew and accepted that they were different, an individual, smart, and outspoken. Polly did not fit neatly into what people thought they should be. They chose not to be confined by race, gender, or age. Walking into a room, people knew Polly was someone special. Small in body, but with a big personality. They were proud and held their head high. Polly Murray was a dedicated lawyer, activist, poet, writer, and priest, always fighting against unfair laws based on race and gender. Polly's legacy and gift is an example of an authentic life well lived. And Debbie went on, in July of 2012, Polly Murray was chosen to be commemorated by the Episcopal Church. Listed on the official calendar by the Episcopal Church, Polly is recognized as the first African-American priest of their gender and for their life's work for justice and freedom. Polly's life and work will continue to inspire and bring hope for generations to come. Courageously, Polly Murray lived the hopes and dreams of their ancestors. And I want to end with the eighth sonnet of the Reverend Dr. Polly Murray's poem, Dark Testament. Hope is a crushed stalk between clenched fingers. Hope is a bird's wing broken by a stone. Hope is a word in a tuneless ditty, a word whispered with the wind, a dream of 40 acres and a mule, a cabin of one's own and a moment to rest, a name and place for one's children and children's children at last. Hope is a song in a weary throat. Give me a song of hope and a world where I can sing it. Give me a song of faith and a people who believe in it. Give me a song of kindliness and a country where I can live it. Give me a song of hope and love and a brown girl's heart to hear it. My friends, we have to keep this hope alive that one day we shall overcome. Thank you, Polly. We will take up the hope and the work in our day. Amen.